Reactions from the CSIRO's report on nuclear energy and the NT passes curfew laws. Good afternoon, I'm Harrison Peterson with the latest from NIRS News. The opposition is disputing some of the CSIRO's nuclear report, which estimates large-scale nuclear reactors will cost twice as much as renewables. The CSIRO has for the first time calculated the electricity generation cost of large-scale nuclear plants, finding it would cost the nation at least $8.5 billion to build and take almost 20 years to complete. The modelling also suggests renewables are the lowest-cost option in the long term. Speaking to Sky News, David Littleproud says the coalition will provide its nuclear plans to the Australian people soon.
We're not working in hypotheticals, we're working in actuals, and Peter Dutton and I will announce it when we're ready, and we're going to do it in totality so the Australian people know, and we'll be able to demonstrate quite clearly what the costs of a transition to nuclear with gas and renewables is.
Meanwhile, Treasurer Jim Chalmers says the report torpedoes opposition leader Peter Dutton's nuclear fantasy.
Nuclear costs more, and it takes longer, and Peter Dutton won't tell us where the reactors are going to go. It makes absolutely no sense for Australia to go down the nuclear road.
The Northern Territory's Children's Commissioner says she wasn't consulted about controversial curfew laws, which passed through the NT Parliament last night. NT police have been given new powers to call snap three-day curfews after last month's youth curfew in Alice Springs. Lawyers and children's advocates say the law could lead to discrimination.
I wasn't consulted. I'm the Children's Commissioner in the Northern Territory. Other colleagues of mine, including the Anti-Discrimination Commissioner, was not consulted. And really prominent Aboriginal elders and leaders of peak organisations, including legal and youth services, were not consulted. And they have significant expertise in this area that we're talking about.
Speaking to the ABC, that's NT Children's Commissioner Shalina Musk. There'll be more after this.
You know, the flu can be passed around as easily as a footy can. But unlike a footy, when the flu's passed around, it can make some of us mob very sick and be really dangerous for everyone in our communities. That's why it's good for all us mob to get protected with a free flu vaccination. Talk to your health worker about getting vaccinated today or visit health.gov.au/flu. And let's give flu the boot. Authorised by the Australian Government, Canberra.
Program sponsor.
The Federal Greens First Nation spokesperson says national leadership is needed to assist states and territories path the treaty. Senator Dorinda Cox has told NIRS News, having states and territories lead the push for treaties will lead to inconsistencies.
We need a Makarrata Commission at the federal level to ensure that we're providing federal leadership on this issue. We then also need a treaty process because right now there are many, many nations across this country who are without determination under the Native Title Act, which means that they don't have the right to negotiate. They don't even have the right to protect. So all of these legislative instruments that are currently being used against First Nations people, the backbone of that is, one, we have to tell the truth about it, And the second part of it, we have to be able to sit at the table and have the right to negotiate. And that's what Makarrata would allow us to do. But we need the government to make sure that as federal leaders, they are absolutely crafting and producing a process that all the states and territories can fall into. Otherwise, we will end up with a cobbled together mess of inconsistency.
Speaking to NITV last week, the Albanese government said money that had been set aside for a proposed Makarrata Commission, a national treaty and truth-telling body, had been allocated into closing the gap measures. Pharmacists will be banned from manufacturing replica weight loss drugs. Here's the Federal Health Minister, Mark Butler, speaking to the ABC.
At the end of the day, the clearest possible advice from our safety regulators to me was we need to shut down this market. It poses too much of a public safety risk. There's always been an exception to allow a one-off product to be made up by a pharmacist, but those exceptions have never allowed the sort of large-scale manufacturing that we're seeing in this market with products pretending to be Ozempic or Mounjaro, and frankly, they pose a very significant safety risk.
And that is the latest from NIRS News.
The National Indigenous Radio Service, the voices of our people.
Right now, car manufacturers send their most efficient new cars to countries that have fuel efficiency standards. To bring us in line with the rest of the world, the Australian government is establishing a new vehicle efficiency standard for all new cars, whether they're diesel, electric, hybrid or petrol, giving you more choice and saving you money. Find out about Australia's new vehicle efficiency standard at cleanercars.gov.au. Authorised by the Australian Government, Canberra.
Station sponsor.
We've all been feeling cost of living pressures. That's why the Australian Government is bringing in tax cuts from the 1st of July. For the drivers delivering groceries and the people buying them. For the people working in offices and the tradespeople building them. For nurses saving lives and the teachers shaping them. They're tax cuts for every taxpayer. Visit taxcuts.gov.au to find out how the 1st of July tax cuts will benefit you. Authorised by the Australian Government, Canberra.
Station sponsor.
Hey, Bill and Gunn, welcome to Black Lord Tribal Edition. Murumu here with you today, and welcome to the show. And once again, we hope you're doing well wherever you are tuned in via the Yidinji broadcast service. If you're listening to it, that is on the Yidinji territory. And if you're listening to it via the National Indigenous Radio Service inside of Australia, it's via our friends at Bumba Bipra Media, 98.7 FM. And they also have a wonderful Facebook page that broadcasts the show as well. So check out those details and become a friend of Bumba Bipra. Now, wherever you are, we thank you to everyone that allows us to travel using your spectrum. And we thank you very much, and we hope you find that useful, this program that is. Joining me today is Ganyara and Nuralam. I do believe Bumi is out and about somewhere and might pop in later on. But anyway, we'll start the show with a few things, Ganyara, that you were concerned about. And one thing that obviously has been around for a long time is racism. And we talk about how the very foundation of the Commonwealth of Australia was based on race and still is today, but it's getting a bit post referendum. The incidents, I guess, or people feel that racism is showing itself a little bit more frequently these days.
Yeah, well, look, where we are in the home of the no vote, you know, in the Atherton Tablelands in Australia, there, believe it or not, Mareeba, the town there, actually had the highest no vote across Australia. So, which really shows, you know, what Mareeba is. And it's based on the white Australia policy. It always has been, always will be. And there is a very vocal racist element there. In saying that, the voice issue had highlighted a lot of truths, I suppose, about the establishment of Australia and why they've got to have all this stuff and that the sovereignty has not been ceded, which didn't go down well with the white Australia. They sort of felt offended by it. You know, their great Australia was established as the role model of democracy in the world, and how great it always has been. And look, it always has been great if you've been a white fella. But if you've been a black fella, you know, it hasn't been so great, has it? You know, the stolen generation, the stolen wages, the genocide, the murder, the poisoned flower, the pox-ridden blankets. It hasn't been a really great thrill for the Aboriginal people. So we've got to understand that. But when they only make up 3% of the population, the 97% get their way, of course, which is always how it is. But the voice referendum did highlight a lot of issues within Australia that need to be addressed. And the racism has been more vocal now. It's been more in your face, especially in places like Mareeba, where there is a rising youth crime rate. And as I say to everyone who wants to talk about this issue, when you've lost everything and you've got nothing to lose, why wouldn't you do this stuff? You know, it's a form of rebellion. It's a form of rebelling against the belligerent occupant. And, you know, people will lose it when they've got nothing left to lose, and the Aboriginal people have lost it long ago. So expect the young fellows who've got nothing to lose to go out and, you know, commit crime. Homelessness is on the rise, especially up in the Tablelands, where we have some of the lowest vacancy rates in rental properties. People are living, they're doing it tough. They are living under bridges, they're living in tents. Even the Tableland Shire Council, they even issue you with tents now. If you're homeless and you go there, they'll give you a tent to live in. They've got nowhere to put you, you know, so you're living in a tent. Here it is. What have you got to lose? Where are you going to get the food from? When you're down and out, when you're Aboriginal and down and out, where do you get the food? No, we'll give you grog, money for grog, and that'll keep you quiet down on the creek. But it's not the right, it's not the solution. So racism has been really prominent, and it has got a lot worse, especially in the areas where I am. But people are just, they are so unaware of the underlying issue. And the underlying issue is the establishment of the Commonwealth of Australia as a white fella place, and not for a everyone place.
Yeah, it's certainly the Australia Project that is one of those things where I guess it's continued. The status quo remains, and it's the model, Yirrkala. When we're talking about models and things like that, the model and it hasn't changed. It just has manifested into different departments, different names of things, but it's the same animal. And when you look back over the last 20, 30, 40 years or whatever it is more of the same. And it's because that it's another system in place that isn't, that doesn't belong to the tribal nations or isn't designed by the tribal nations. For example, the Sovereign Unity Government is very different to the Commonwealth of Australia.
Yeah, of course, and you know that's probably one of the biggest aspects is that the current system is designed to be unchangeable, even though it's called democracy. Gagnari, you might have to help me here with this one. I know there's a couple of different systems in the Australian way of doing things, which we've witnessed. One of them recently was the Voice, which was a referendum, and there's another one which sounds something like plebiscite or something like that. What's that one called? Do you know what I'm talking about there?
Yeah, well, look, you know, they're trying to gauge the support. A referendum is made to change the constitution, where a plebiscite is sort of gauging the support of an idea. That won't alter the constitution, but so you get the general feel of what the public want.
And that was sort of what shocked me quite a while back, a decade or so ago, when I looked into, you know, how can we change things? Surely the people can change things. And even a referendum doesn't actually change the model. It might change some small things within the system, but the system cannot be changed by either of those two methods. And you know, that's what the Yidinji government is here to basically promote and put forward, is a way that is the best way for all human beings, both on Yidinji territory and worldwide.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I guess that when you dig deep, this is the only way out, really, to be fair and honest. I think that the other way is exhausting all avenues, high record of juvenile detention, crime, homelessness. It is falling apart, while a certain top of the town isn't falling apart. And, you know, that's the story of the world all over. The thing that I guess is just an example of that is, let's listen to Sky News now, who have said that the government's focus on the referendum, basically arguing that the government's focus on the referendum has now seen a slip in the closing the gap targets, when really under Morrison, under all governments, it has been slipping. It never has even touched the desired levels of what closing the gap was all about. So let's have a listen to these guys.
Efforts to close the gap between Indigenous Australians and the rest of the country, in a report in the Australian newspaper yesterday, quote, stalled during the Voice referendum.
Surprise.
There you go. So all that effort by the Albanese government and those who are responsible for closing the gap, that means raising the living standards and prosperity of Indigenous Australians, they are the ones now saying, you know what, Labor? all our efforts, you know, were stalled by The Voice. So, well done, Labour. You even stuffed that up. Ideology, idiocy and incompetency at every turn.
Well, Rowan, what do you do? You know, I think that, you know, in some ways, yes, it's bad that The Voice campaign stalled progress on closing the gap. We all want to close the gap. But can you just imagine how bad it would be if The Voice had actually passed?
Absolutely.
I mean, like, you want to talk about something that would stop closing the gap. It would be spending all of this money on this huge bureaucracy that would then go pay itself to go, you know, take reports and do things, interfere with parliamentary legislation and do everything else it was going to do, and not actually do anything to close the gap. I mean, you know, like, this is, that was a good result. Let's not forget the fact that this was a very, very good result.
It was a great result, but Labor are ignoring it. They're just plowing ahead in all the different states with their own voices. But the point is, the reality is that this sort of virtue signaling, weird left wing ideological campaign actually has negative impacts on Indigenous Australians who are there on the ground and they're the ones calling it out. There you go.
We had so much focus in recent weeks on the treatment of women, violence against women, so many women being victims of domestic violence in particular. And again, we saw the activist class there be largely silent about the overrepresentation of Indigenous women in those statistics. Now, more than 30 times likely Indigenous women are of being hospitalised due to domestic violence than non-Indigenous women. That is such a shameful, incredible statistic. The stats there are just off the charts, and yet there's this hesitancy to talk about it, to put it on the record because they want to, I don't know, because they're scared of being called racist. I don't know if they're scared of being pointing the finger at a community who really does need to address this issue. But the likes of Jacinta Namba-Jimba-Price have talked about this for years. And they've also
demonised for doing so.
They do, but they also talk about how things like The Voice, the Australia Day debate, the flag debate, all this nonsense actually takes the attention away from the areas that need the focus. But when do you ever hear these activists talk about this issue? I would have thought that would be that and the plight of children would be the number one and two issues you talk about.
You're not suggesting the point the left are hypocrites who don't care about the real problems that they pretend to.
So, yeah, it's all about closing the gap, but really it's maintaining the distance. Them, us, whoever it is, keeping them in squalor, keeping them, giving them a bit of a coin, keep them happy, whether it's grog or money, government contracts, that kind of stuff. But ultimately, the Yidinji Nation is moving forward. We're not interested in state-based treaties. We're not interested in treating with people who don't want to talk with us. And Ganyara, the formal agreement is the way that the Yidinji Nation is looking to move forward.
Well, you've got to look at the gap. You know, what is the gap? The gap is caused by the lack of inclusion of the Aboriginal people from the start. You know, that was where they didn't get a fair go. The white fella had, you know, roughly, you know, 80, 90 years of a head start while they oppressed the Aboriginal people, held them down, and now they say, oh, we'll let them out. You know, give them a go.
But I've heard it said many times, just get over it. You know, and I laugh so many times. Not laugh isn't the right word, but it's hard to stomach the things that you hear when it comes to that statement, because it's that return to white privilege. And I have had so many people who, you know, might be doing so well in their lives, but, you know, I'm doing it hard, and yet, you know, to have something taken from you, insofar as, you know, in this case, it's the access to your own lands. It's the right to be on your own lands. And it's white privilege doesn't understand that the lands is just an extension of your own body. And so this rape and pillage is continuing because it's happening on the lands and the countries that rightly belong to these Aboriginal people.
Oh, absolutely. You know, the Aboriginal people have lost everything. You know, so as they say, just get over it. Now, what about these families that are getting broken into and the car stolen? You know, white families where these little kids are stealing cars. Get over it. Just get over it. You know, oh, the rape and the plunder in the street. Look, just get over it. The black fella had to get over it. He had to get over having his family destroyed, having the kids taken away. He's had to get over having no money for going to work for 30 years. He's had all his resources taken. And they're saying, get over that. Well, if they had to get over that, well, you just get over your little minor problems. But that's not the Yidinji way. The Yidinji way is, let's try and work this out for everyone.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the Yidinji way, because the Yidinji way is not cutting down statues of colonial masters or heroes. And that's what's happened in Tasmania. William Crowther, statue toppling, captured on video as police continue to investigate the matter. This is in down in Hobart there somewhere. Basically, the colonial era statue of William Crowther was toppled this week. This is on the ABC. Just hours before a tribunal was due to hand down its decision on the statue's removal. The video that was posted on social media shows two people in black spray painting the plinth and using an angle grinder, not an ankle grinder, but it did cut it down from his ankles. That's the irony of it. I shouldn't laugh, because property damage is very serious. So police are investigating the thing, which is, you know, and spray painted underneath that is what goes around, basically. It's an interesting thing. Look, you know, I mean, I did chuckle there a little bit, but seriously, I mean, that's, you know, you don't need to do that kind of stuff. And I think that's where Yidinji is a little bit different, even to the point where we were happy to have the Captain Cook statue here. But, I mean, obviously they removed it because it had concrete cans or whatever it was.
Well, look, if we were a normal Australian, we'd say just get over it, you know, just get over it. Who cares? But, look, it's the wrong thing to do. It really is. What they should do with that statue is left it there, but have changed the plaque on the bottom. You know, Crowther, oh, he's the bloke that stole all the body parts. Put that, highlight that in big bold letters all around it. This is who you look up to. This is who you aspire to. These are the great people. Put a big brass plaque on there and leave him standing up there, and even polish him, you know, really shiny so everyone can see who the crooks were. Leave it there, but put an education program around it. He's the bloke that stole the body parts. He's the one that went out and desecrated the Aboriginal people to try and get skulls. He's the one. And make this known forever then. Like I said, leave Captain Cook stand here. Leave him on country, but put a big brass plaque at the bottom. He's the one who stole the country. He's the one who broke orders. He's the bad guy. And you aspire to, he's your master who established this place. You look up to this sort of rot. These people who were not good people. They were pretty bent and twisted in the mind to do what they've done.
Yeah, you're right. Well, he is the one that they've named universities after. They've named highways after. So there must be some real worship going on for that history, isn't there?
Absolutely. And that's why I'm saying leave it all in place, but educate the people. Educate the white fellas, by the way, the white Australia, because the way they look up to this. So, Leo, leave the angle grinder at home and don't go chopping them down. Don't go putting paint on them. Actually go and polish
them. Let him cook. Let him cook.
But that's what it is. How do you educate someone by, if you remove the statue, why are they removing it? Yeah. Maybe he doesn't fit the agenda anymore.
Yeah, I think, you know, I don't really have much time for statues, even, like, you know, even if they wanted to put up a Yidinji one, let's say, I wouldn't. Okay, fair enough, if you want to do that. But I'd rather improve people's lives than spend money on a bust or, you know, or whatever they call those things, the silicon parts. You know, anyway, the things is, like, we're being serious now, gentlemen. The outrage that people are feeling right now is really it perpetuates the model that we just spoke about earlier, and that adversarial approach to things is what feeds that machine. And you didn't just come in here with peace, kindness, and love, you know, thanks to the direction of the elders. We're not going to get caught up in that kind of rubbish, because it's not the way. It's never been the way, and we'll stand here to our very last breath. Defending the faith of the Yidinji way, and I think that's really important for the world to understand that.
Look, we talked about the gap earlier. The gap is the lack of a treaty, the formal agreement between us and them, the coexisting sovereignties. And it was said in a recent court case up in Mareeba that you won't have sovereignty until we give it to you. No way. That's not how that's not how it should be said. We refuse to recognise your sovereignty until there's a treaty. That's what should have been said but the magistrate didn't understand what he's into, what's going on. It's a simple It's a simple acknowledgement that they do have sovereignty. We do recognise, we do set up a formal agreement where we don't have to go and have these statues removed. Leave them there. If people have wasted money on it, we've wasted a lot of energy on that, leave it there, but remind everyone what the truth of the matter is, educate the Australians. But the gap is the lack of education. The gap is the lack of education about a treaty, the formal agreement, that one. That there is the issue. There's nothing else can be resolved until that's resolved. How do you sort out the gaps in education when you're trying to force Aboriginal kids into a white fella world of education? You know, you're talking about the adversarial stuff. I seen a bit of a correspondence the other day here about in the good city of Gimoy or Cairns about a quarry that's going on and how the government have their Protection Act. But they simply, this is the studies that they looked at was 10 year old, and you know that these big multinational companies control the government, they are the government, they pay the government. Politicians are paid off, by the way, in this country, where it's unseen corruption, you just don't notice it. But they get certain benefits, you know, when they retire from politics, they get all these benefits, these lurks and perks. They like the member here in Cairns. I see his wife was getting certain benefits paid in for candle making or whatever it was. You know, it's crazy stuff in Aboriginal communities. Whether not, it doesn't improve their community. What improves their community is employment, is to understand the conflicts that are going on. These are the gaps that are there. This is what is resolved with the treaty.
Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, even looking at some of the other stories around the place, there's a funding review being looked at in the Barkly region, which is in basically the Northern Territory there somewhere. It promised to deliver 28 initiatives to address disadvantage in Tennant Creek and the surrounding area. Halfway through the deal's 10-year life, most of the measures remain incomplete and the body overseeing the funding rollout has called for a review. So, I mean, this has been going on when I was a young tacker as a journo. You report on the same things over and over again and there's no remedy. So what is the solution? Sovereignty and getting up and doing it for yourself, it's hard, yes, but at the end of the day, you're going to have to do it. Otherwise, if you don't govern yourself, then someone's going to govern you, as simple as that.
Yeah, and yeah, this is what the issue stands and will remain to be. As you said, the same thing's happening over and over. Closing the gap for something like that to happen and to come to bear requires integrity. Requires honesty, you know, requires justice. All these things have to be in place before there can be outcomes of any other sorts that follow, because those things have been put in place. And of course, you know, and I still say the unbelievable integrity of the Yidingi nation to offer a treaty to Australia after everything that the Australian historical leadership has done to the Yidingi nation and all the other nations on this country is still staggering, that sort of integrity lives in Yidingi. And it's really what it's about. It's about showing that integrity first that allows everything else to unfold.
Get over it. You know, just get over it. That's what they'd say in Australia. They're not interested in integrity. Get over the integrity part.
Yes, you're listening to Black Lord Tribal Edition right across the planet today. We'll be back after the break.
Doing you, Mob. You're listening to the smooth sounds of Gawal G and my brother Jamal Yami from the Naughty North. You know that ain't come no alpha.
Cause my jigger's gonna bash in the dark. See some blacks on turn fashionable. Rich in a solar culture, but you know that this don't equal cash in a vault. Saturated with some dumb dogs, killing with no gun though. All these rappers, they are unknown. So tragic, so tagging all them jundos. Put the money on the racks, and I cut my body soul with that blood magic. I ain't on no straight and narrow, but I put it cutting edge, looking so jagged. But like I'm stumped, what a pinko rule the world that I love. OD. Track is back, it's in the mission. Now we march across the city limits. Magic.
in them prisons quicker than our kids can even finish school. West Papuaki independence with our influences from these ministers in charge. Cut me root off open acting sinister. Super handers, that's a move to spin and chair. Who this in there with off of them razor? Curb with a KKK. Amen. Cut the city off, I'm sinister. Fighting back with them black businesses that I've invested. Tell them gubbers, I got off of them in questions. What my elders died before they pensions. Couldn't stomach truth and why ingest it. Love a love for taught me all about who I'ma be, a product of this life is destined.
Blood magic, blood magic. Blood magic, blood magic.
Soldiers, go and see Trick's not down. We're taking you to church. Love ya.
Well, Professor Asmi Wood from the Australian National University College of Law has been a guest on the program a number of times, and we're going to review one of the exciting interviews we did with him about the treaty workshops that the Yidinji government was involved with last year. And this is a pre-recorded interview with the excellent Asmi Wood. Enjoy. Asmi, welcome to the program. It's not your first time, I know that, and we love having you on. Talk about these workshops. There's a lot of talk about treaties. People often mention that, in whether it's the Uluru Statement or they're talking about sovereignty. But maybe people take them through what an actual treaty is, because a lot of people may not know what they want from a treaty, for example, which is why I guess this exercise took place in the first place. But talk a bit about that.
Thank you for having me here. I'm very grateful to you for your participation and you know, bringing other communities here to Ngambri Ngunnawal land where the ANU is situated to look at things which are absolutely vital to Aboriginal people moving forward. I think Uncle Michael Mansell said in 2003 how small communities, whatever that means, are much more true to the notions of their own people, whether you agree with them or not, than what he, I think, obliquely says are assimilated Aboriginals to some extent. So treaty is a legal agreement between two nations, nation to nation. If you remember Mr. John Howard, when he said we were all Australians, said you can't make a treaty between yourselves. But that's if you consider everybody Australian. Many Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander people do not accept that characterization of their people. But as we found in our exercise, when you have two communities that assert their nationhood, that fits into the Montevideo Convention, which talks about permanent populations, knowing your borders, having a system of governance, having methods of dealing with people, you know, whether people call it citizenship or belonging. These terms don't matter, but you really live, breathe, and behave as if you were a nation, and you assert it. So in international law, assertion is important. Of course, it's not always easy when you're dealing with a very strong party on the other side. But nonetheless, you've done this for a long time, and I know you've done this for a very, very long time. So the idea of a treaty is that you have a people like Yidinji, and we have another group, Birigaba, who probably haven't done this for as long as you have, if I'm not mistaken, but you've brought them along a long way. You've helped them. You know, there's a huge mutual respect between the two communities. You behave in the way we understand our ancestors to have behaved, with love, courtesy, kindness, mutual respect, all of these things which we want our people to project and to enjoy as well. So you have two sovereign nations entering into agreements between each other. Of course, there are some technical issues that go with it, which we covered on the first day, looking at, you know, how nations normally behave in this kind of situation. And, you know, you behave like two nations really entering into treaty with each other. There was no... there was nothing to say that you were not bona fide nations entering into treaty in good faith, considering the law, not ignoring law. And, you know, there was a meeting of minds on many things. Unfortunately, we didn't have enough time to go through all the provisions that we could have used. But the provisions that we did cover were done in an amazing way. I might remind you that the treaty negotiations went on to very late that night, you know, where you had a bit of dinner and continued to pore through the text and the concepts, as most nation states do. So you behaved in that way, which was really exciting to see.
Yeah, it was very enjoyable. And what I loved about the exercise was that there were lawyers there, there were students, which was really great because they participated and got immersed into what we were doing. And I think that's really important to, when we're talking about spheres of law and different types of law, I mean, obviously when you look, I'm walking down the road here at the college and there's family law, there's criminal law, there's corporations law, but... You know, where I see the ANU and some other institutions leading that space is Indigenous-specific law. Not just as a side dish, let's say. And to be fair, I it was done in a culturally safe space. And that's a very important thing. And congratulations to the ANU for providing that space. So these spheres of law that we talk about... is something that the students can consider and look at and see what is this, because it's something that may come to surface in reality in the next few years, because everyone's talking about treaties, everyone's talking about, you know, what they want from the Commonwealth of Australia, for example, if that's the one they choose to treaty with. So I think it was very beneficial to all parties involved.
Yes, I think the culturally safe space was created by the two nations themselves. There was a lot of preparatory work that we did with you about what were your expectations, and we tried to do our best to accommodate as much as we could of those. In terms of the students, we had quite a few Aboriginal students, and we also had some non-Aboriginal students and lawyers. So the benefit for the Aboriginal students is clear, that they can see this is really what our communities back home should be endeavouring to do. You know, one of the things that I think Uncle Michael had said is Western education is great, but a lot of our kids go there and become assimilated. So these kinds of programs help to pull them back from that coercive assimilation, because they see how elders behave, they see how elders treat each other with respect, and they see the fidelity and the and, you know, that deference to elders and things that we always talk about, but perhaps, I'm not saying you, but sometimes it's not always evident in our communities. So them seeing these things is fantastic, and they take it back hopefully to their own communities. For the non-Indigenous lawyers and students, the experience was amazing. I think one of the judges who I won't name, who was at the moot on the final day, he said if he had seen this process taking place, some of the cases that he decided in the past might have been decided quite differently. So this is a matter of education, not just for some people, but for all of us. I mean, I feel I learned so much from the process. And that was a common refrain. A lot of people said that they learned a lot. I remember, I can't remember how many years ago, talking to you about these issues, and when what you were doing seemed quite outside the box to, you know, if that doesn't sound too crude, of how, you know, you develop your own law, your own systems of governance, and exercise your self-determination. I think a lot of people, I think the first overhead that I put up was, first they laugh at you, then they join you, and then you defeat them. I mean, that was, I think, what Mahatma Gandhi said. And I think the arrogance of the strong sometimes is their downfall, and the humility and the fidelity of what they would call weak. I don't think you're weak by any stretch of the imagination, but that's how they perceive us. And the Uluru statement talks about the powerlessness of Aboriginal communities, which I didn't see in your communities, because your elders spoke strongly, powerfully, forcefully, politely, and, you know, with a great degree of integrity.
Yes, we would probably say that that powerlessness may be experienced by Indigenous Australians, as opposed to, obviously, the Yidinji Nation is moving forward. But there's a reality check there too. I mean, it's a difficult road, but, you know, it's one that, if we don't do it, who else is going to do it for us? And I think that's where there's a real sense of amongst the, let's say, the legal community here at the ANU, a very big interest in how that shift in or closing that gulf of representation, or whatever you want to call it, or self-governance, for example, how will that be achieved, and what is the model? And, you know, the written law is really good, because there are lots of examples on the type of models you can choose. And those international laws and standards are very important, because it's something that you can use like a tool, and hence they are instruments. But I like the fact that this is going to possibly lead to bigger and better things, and that there'll be a lot more acceptance around institutions, not only here but abroad, about that, looking at this unique window of seeing it from the Indigenous point of view, which you may not get, or you may get it inside the Commonwealth of Australia. It depends on what you're looking at. But, you know, these, the ability to create law, and the grundnorms that the tribal societies have, now they have these tools that they can pick up and start to use. And we would say for the peace, order, and good governance of their community, their nation, their tribe, their mob, whatever. But also the important part that these things need to take place for true settlement, or security of for all persons in the future, and that's a really big thing that we spoke of on the day of that that moot, and I think some of the students were really excited by that, because they could see that there needs to be this other interaction from this other party. We just can't be talking about X group and whatnot, but not talking to them. And as I often point out, that the Yidinji government is the voice for the Yidinji Nation, because it's created by the Yidinji Nation. It wasn't one that we had to ask permission for someone else to give it to us or whatnot. So, but I don't want to confuse those issues. But the importance now of legal experts like yourselves and practitioners working together in saying what would be the most appropriate model. How do you want to move forward as a group or a nation?
So the answer to that, because we believe in self-determined communities, is up to your community. As lawyers, we serve your community, not because we are Yidinji, but because we are brothers in a different kind of way. One of the most fascinating things I heard that came out of your negotiation between Yidinji and Birigaba was this. The Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People talk about minimum standards. And, you know, the settler colonial countries really pushed our people down in terms of what they could expect. But you didn't buy into that. You didn't buy into that. What you said was, you're going to set your own standards, which are moral, which are truthful, which are transparent, and going to set those as a minimum standard. Now, what this does for the whole group of Indigenous people around the world is to lift the whole ship. The ship rises with the tide, and what you're doing is lifting the tide. You're just pushing everybody up. This is not something that I've ever seen among Indigenous communities, because I think largely they feel beaten down. I didn't sense that either community of yours, but there was a kind of this is who we are. Yes, we have to, you know, interact with other people, but there are certain standards that we will not lower because we want to be true to ourselves. So this is an absolutely fascinating thing, because it really allows us as Indigenous people on this continent to raise the standards, something that I never thought I would see in my lifetime. And that was wonderful. We still have to do it, but if you know where you're going, you're likely to get there. If you don't know where you're going, I mean, you know, then you're going to sort of walk hither and thither. Yeah,
and you know, what Bumi said, you know, was really touching at the end there when we were debriefing, that we're not criminals. Like that's what it is. Like we're not criminals on our own territory, but we can see that the need to use the written law now to express to the world and describe to the world and codify what our values are, like you said, and that's an important thing. Whereas possibly in years past, those standards or whether we agreed with them or not, they impacted on our lives. So it's really good that that these matters were put on the table for consideration. And I think that really gentle approach that you earlier mentioned by both nations there, it did have a huge impact on the students, for example. And when we were having dinner, they were talking about, you know, what would a better world be like? I mean, if the written law is there to create a better world, and how can that fundamentally be, let's say, become more real, because, you know, there's injustices all over the place, and sometimes the written law doesn't provide a sense of true justice or truth, even, you know. These are versions of truth, and people will want some sort of ultimate truth, I guess. So I think that was an interesting exercise as well. What was some of the feedback from the students about being part of this exercise?
I think they found it absolutely fascinating. They said nothing they've learnt at law school even remotely compares to this, which is true. You know, we only talk about one law. We don't really talk about plurality. We don't talk about Indigenous issues other than what the High Court has said about it. This is quite traumatic for our students. You know, it's not something that non-Indigenous people understand. But when they come to a space which is truly Indigenous, and we are attempting to use Indigenous norms without ignoring other people's norms, nobody ever said, well, to hell with the rest of the world, we're not going to deal with them. Nobody ever said that. They said, well, we'll deal with them. And I think one of the examples that came out was what good faith might mean. You know, good faith is a beautiful word, but it's not always exercised in its spirit. I think the delegates on both sides wanted to define some of the qualities of good faith, and that is truthfulness, not misleading the other side, you know, acting with transparency. It's a whole lot of words that, you know, you see from time to time in different cases, but not articulated in that one spot, in that one particular kind of way. So I know we didn't do this, but one of the things I hope that would come out is that we create a dictionary of terms for treaty and define these terms in the way, you know, the two communities have defined them. I think that would be, you know, and when we deal with other indigenous communities to say, this is what we hold good faith to mean. And, you know, we will not stoop to the kinds of behaviours that other nations have stooped to.
And that was Professor Azmi Wood from the College of Law at the Australian National University. You're listening to Black Law Tribal Edition right across the planet today. We'll be back after the break.
Yeah, man. Yes, we're there. As it originally originated, Abita Yahweh. Original Rastaman, they are coming from international sound systems. Whoa. We there, say. Reggae music expanding at the source. Boom! So bien, vengo que contarte una historia que cumpliera sin de llamarte. La gente solo quiere temer y extrañarte. Solo baila pa' que te emocione, que esto está que arde. Fuego en la esquina desde que lo veo. Y el dancehall lo único que yo anhelo. Desde que levanto el sol cuando raise up, say, say. Play it, reggae music is the only solution to all this war. Yeah, it's the only people that can feel it. The only's gonna know the truth. Yeah, tell them, reggae music is the only way to unite, to be soul. Yeah, one love, one people, the single origin. Say, same thing. Así que dale pa' mí, que yo quiero pa' ti. Todo lo que tienes, tengo fuego para ti. Desde el origin, Colombian, Saran. Todo lo que quieras, te pongo a gozar. Fuego, fuego, pa' los que quieren quemar. Políticos que se roban el dinero, man. Explotan a sus mismos humanos, Franza. Y todo lo que quieren está mal. Yao Chan, Babylon, Chan down. Tonight, tonight, Babylon is gonna burn down. Chan, Chan, Tiran, Babylon. Ay, Zaya, 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 man. Cha! Staya from the studio. Jamin Sesh, Yao, Astro Grim, Gina, Icaro, Fuego, Widea Se.
Well, that's the end of the program with some final comments. Yirilim and Ganyara, I guess racism has always really been there, I think. And, you know, no one's perfect. And, you know, there's reverse racism. It comes in all forms and shapes and sizes, but at the end of the day, it's still racism and it's wrong. You know, I think people are tired of it, to be fair, and they really do want something that's true and just.
Yeah, I suppose, you know, I'm not sure what the term reverse racism is, but, you know, from my perspective, that's one thing I've treasure as a memory, is that, you know, not being treated differently because of the colour of my skin when I was with the friends that I have. And, you know, that's something very special that Yidinji carries forth to the rest of the world. And hopefully that can lead us in a new direction.
You know, and actually, we'll get back to the gap and Azmi Woods there. I wonder, you know, why is he actually talking about treaty? I wonder what the truth of the matter is. Why are they, ANU, you know, one of the bigger universities in Australia, one of the leading law universities in the world, I think they're in the top 20 globally. Why are they talking about treaty? You know, if there's no such thing as treaty and sovereignty and all these issues, why are they talking about it? So that's what I say to all the mob out there. If they're talking about this, there must be something behind it. Where there's smoke, there's fire, you know. And in this case, the heat is on Australia. They don't have a treaty. They are a belligerent occupant. And that's why the ANU, you know, are starting to work out we've got to do something about this treaty or the lack of a treaty, because we might offer it to China, or we might offer it to someone else. We might give it to the Americans, to the US. How about we invite the US and offer them a treaty, and they can protect us from the Australians? This is what the world has to realise. We still retain sovereignty, and we haven't ceded it to anyone, whether in part or in whole, and we might just do that. But why are they talking about treaty?
Yeah, it's a very good question. The obvious thing that comes to mind is that, you know, even blind Freddie can see it. That the Yidinji Nation is building the mechanism there through the government, through the banking system, through the whole lot.
And, you know, Australia, there's a romantic comedy that I was forced to watch a long time ago saying he's just not that into you. They can only say that a certain amount of times now because they will need us. When things get a bit argy-bargy on the global scale, then obviously the Yidinji Nation and its government especially have an allegiance to protect the Yidinji people and the Yidinji way of life. That is the sole priority. And if someone else wants to do that and not Australia, then we're going to have to seriously consider that. Now, I hope that Australia and the ones that and the executive, you know, snap out of this this dream that they think they can just keep on sleeping and not wake up and put out the fire. They're living in a madman's world if they think that. It really does come down to the tribal nations now offering that in a true and correct way, because if you just are, you know, if you're just doing it as an Indigenous Australian, then you're perpetuating the model that we earlier spoke about at the beginning of the show.
Well, it's not a proper treaty, is it? So we've got to do this the right way, do it once and for all. Let's get it right this time. And that's why I got to wonder why we got invited to ANU. If we're such a radical, you know, really bent and twisted lot, why did we get invited to go out and be part of it?
Yeah, look, you know, we get invited to lots of different things. You know, we were invited a few years ago to a World Economic Forum event. I spoke at that. I said the same thing that I'm saying right now, that you can't just kick the can down the road. You're going to have to talk to the tribes. There's no global reset without Yidinji or Kuki Yalanji or anyone else. The tribes have to come first. And at the end of the day, they're going to have to build that world, the tribes, that is. So this is a really important thing now. We've been talking about this for a while. I do get a little bit concerned that not a lot of people have done what Yidinji has. But ultimately, I know that everyone will have a go at it. But you sort of want that to happen sooner than later. Maybe that's a bit selfish of me to think like that. But I just want that to protect the tribe's interests for future generations.
Oh, look, it's just getting it over and done with the right way this time. That's all. Let's not waste anyone else's life, you know, that's happened for the last 150, 200 years. A lot of lives have been wasted. Let's just get over and done with and get this thing sorted out for everyone.
That's it for today's show. Go Warragul and Nundu. May God's peace be upon you wherever you are listening to the program. And in the almighty name of Yeshua HaMashiach, he's the Alpha and the Omega. We'll catch you next week. Garu.
Ah. Cause I'm coming at the zoo. No power, no food. Aye. Back in housing, making moves. Now we represent the zoo. Still the same, nothing new. Change, stay true, bro. I'm coming at the bay.
Which way?
Which way? That way. Aye. Still put on for the north to the state. I'm in the bay. 4K all day. Aye. But this one here for the game.
It's the fresh and all original. Naughty Northside Aboriginal. The lyrical criminal. Out my spies, individual. I'm fresh. Bruh, I taught you how to dress. This the cleanest from a nest. Brother Swab with finesse. I'm from Stafford. Like a carrot to a rabbit. Got the habit when I'm rapping. What up, Northside? Yeah, what's happening? Coming through. What it do? BLB, KTS, NSB, be the crew. Check it. Brother, still we are up in Stafford Heights where the hills be bruh. Rolling round, trim side through the Zoomia. 4K your day, now you feel me, bruh. We done fresh Murrays, fresh to death Murray. In the hood, rolling out like we Steph Curry. Put your hands in the air, that's for my people, G. It's all Northside love, check the frequency.
So I tell him, g'day, hey, how's it going? I'm representing Northside Bar, and you should know it. A place with a lad, show love to the lads. Born up the water, cuz gotta keep it flowing. You know it's 4-5 Northside, never lacking. From my place, so we keep the CP packing. Clean pool as I rip it. You ain't from the bay, just admit it. Hitting six on his track like cricket. Also, peep this snippet. Me and TG, bro, we playing games like chess. Strategic with the moves, yes, better bring your best. He copped the L when my knight put his king to rest. Like GSC, that when my boys put their man to test. Bruh, you know what I find funny? Cats talk about riding and hopping out like bunnies. But when they see us, they say these lads are nothing. Watch them take a step, then watch them bounce.
Cause I'm coming out the zoo. No power, no food. Aye, back in housing, making moves. Now we represent the zoo. Still the same, nothing new. Aye, ain't nothing changed, stay true, bro. I'm coming at the bay.
Which way?
Which way? That way. Aye, still put on for the north to the state. I'm in the bay. 4K all day. Aye, but this one here for the game.
Lord, TG, look, the menace of the NS. Check the CV, no pretenders. Do it for the block like Tetris. I'm pouring like a sentence. Got bars like a felon, the hard like I'm Willis, huh? Welcome to the top of the compass where my butter's trying to function and my hustles keep running and my duckles keep pumping. End of the day, it's lovely. No matter what the north, always getting up to something. I'm